The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Surprise, no, this is not Will Brinson with a slightly deeper voice and a Boston accent. It's Tyler Sullivan as your host. Will, under the weather from Vegas, Andor still getting the hair plugs of the Nickelodeon slime out of his hair. I will be driving the bus for you today, and alongside I have some great, great co-pilots, Brady Quinn and Lijay Doosable. Doosdays with Brady. I think I'm contractually obligated to say what's going on, guys.
Hey, maybe Lijay has you doing that, Tyler. That is not in my
time. That's all on Brady right there, man.
Hold on, Tyler. I have to ask you, first off, thanks for helping out, coming in during this kind of pinch, if you will, with Will. But this is a couple weeks in a row, Lijay, or maybe is it two out of three, I think? Because a couple weeks ago, Will's a hairy guy, Tyler, so we knew he was like trying to get some of that hair removal. So it was a little bit odd that he still had enough hair to get caught up in the slime and dealing with issues with that.
It's almost like the slime bounced off his head a little bit. I thought it was.
You would think, man. I remember seeing the replay because I literally just got off Spotlight when they decided to slime him, and I was like, I was a little bit surprised it didn't like parting of the Red Sea. It kind of fell down like normal, especially after the hair, issue that he has. So I was a little bit surprised by that.
Yeah, Brinson hair, slime apparently do not mix. But let me tell you, this episode of the Pick Six Podcast is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. But what is no more is the 2023 NFL season. And this episode is going to be kind of a big picture storyline of what we're going to be looking at this offseason. We're going to preview some storylines, do some predictions, and all of that good stuff. But first, I do want to give the NFL and CBS a nice little pat on the back as we look back on this Super Bowl one last time. It was the most watched Super Bowl of all time. And not only that, Super Bowl 58 was the most watched television show in history. You had 123.4 million viewers. You had about 202 million viewers that watched at least some of the game. Lijay, I'll start with you. What made this Super Bowl so intriguing to so many people?
I mean, the obvious one, right? Taylor Swift being part of the Chiefs kingdom, right? Yep. I mean, you think that what Brady added, what, about 20 million viewership?
I don't know. Maybe more, man. I mean,
maybe more. Yeah.
A lot of Swifties out there.
Yeah. So you look at that. And then you would think when you talk about storylines, the revenge factor for the 49ers having lost this Super Bowl to the Chiefs 4 years ago. So I think a lot of people tuned in for that because it's rare we get to see a rematch in the Super Bowl. I think going back to, the Cowboys and Bills is when we saw that constantly throughout the 90s. For us to have this same matchup just 4 years apart, I think was very intriguing to a lot of people. So I think it's a tie between the Swifties. I won't even say a tie because, like Brady said, the Swifties alone might have been 30-plus million viewers by themselves, but then also the rematch of the Super Bowl from 4 years ago.
Well, I'll tell you this real quickly. You mentioned the Swifties. It was a huge increase in women that watched the game. It was plus 9% year over year. And then when you go from women age 18 to 34, it was about a 6% increase year over year. So that certainly at least had to play a factor. One other thing that I thought was interesting was there was multiple different streams of this game. Obviously, it was on CBS. You could watch it on Paramount Plus, and we had a Nickelodeon alternative broadcast, and those alternate broadcasts didn't seem to cannibalize each other at all, which, Brady, it kind of made me think, obviously we have other alternative broadcasts. Do you think we're going to see even more of that now that we are seeing that it's not really hurting the overall main product?
Yeah, I think, you know, cannibalism is something that you're always concerned by. I think, not to talk about another network, but you know, you look at what ESPN has been doing, or Disney, ESPN, ABC, has been doing with Monday Night Football, having your normal presentation of Monday Night Football and then this alternative broadcast with both Eli and Peyton Manning and you know, kind of the Manning cast, if you will, for a lot of their college football games. I mean, they blow it out. They've got like every single possible channel they've got on the college football national championship or semifinal games. They've got alternative broadcasts where if you're a super diehard fan and maybe you love your team, you can like hear the radio group or former alums who are just sitting there chilling, talking like it's a podcast about the game. And so they kind of have something for everyone. I think everyone's trying to figure out, as we're venturing into, I don't want to say somewhat of the unknown, but as streaming becomes more a portion of this, as people's habits tend to kind of change and, you know, people are looking for more of, I think maybe not so much national presence, but more of like guys who speak to the small nuances of local markets. I mean, Tyler, you're embedded with the New England Patriots and up there in the Northeast. I mean, you'll be able to give us a better sense of what's happening there with the Patriots and what this year was like more than anyone else. And I think people look for that sort of, you know, intense sort of content, if you will, or more intimate content. I think the other thing is, you know, outside of looking at the actual variation of streams or opportunities to watch, it's also the Nielsen rating system. You know, a few years ago, it wasn't as quite as sharp as it is now. I think you're seeing more what hotels, bars, all of that's factoring in more than it was before. It didn't used to be like that. So they've even had to sharpen their rating system that I think have helped, you know, increase the actual viewership and numbers, because we weren't getting that before. We're only getting households. And I think there was a lot of networks and probably even advertisers who are kind of scratching their head going, well, what is the real reach? I think with streaming, you get a much more accurate idea of who that person is that's consuming the product or consuming the content in this case. But as the rating system and as that continues to change as far as how we go about tracking viewership, I think those numbers are probably only going to increase, because I just have a hard time believing that even though 123.4 million is a record, like that's incredible, it's awesome, I'm like, what's the rest of America doing? Like, are you really trying to tell me? Are you really trying to tell me that over half of America isn't watching the Super Bowl? Like, I just, exactly. I don't buy it. I don't believe it. I think the number is probably even higher than that. I know the reach goes over 200 million, but I'm like, you're hard pressed to find someone who's like, oh, the Super Bowl was on this past weekend. I completely slipped my mind. Like, I don't know anyone in my life, in my stratosphere, is like that. So, I think the numbers are still probably a little bit short-sighted. How many people actually viewed it?
And to your point, Brady, right? When you look at the Super Bowl, it's all about entertainment, right? And you talk about the age demographic that it touches. Now with the Nickelodeon show, you got kids tuning in to watch that. You talked about Taylor Swift being in there. And Tyler, you just spoke a 9% increase in women viewership and I think 6% between ages 18 to 34. And then you throw in the entertainment like Usher, right? So you're talking about, you know, a lot of millennials tuning in to see Usher at halftime. So I'm with you. Yes. You know, 122 or 123 is groundbreaking, but I'm like, yo, what is the rest of America truly doing where you don't tune in for some portion of the Super Bowl because it affects your age demographic?
Yeah, it is kind of crazy though. You know, there's so many, like you guys are mentioning, there's just so many different things to watch nowadays that it does feel like the Super Bowl though is still that tentpole moment in a calendar year where everybody, or at least most people, sit down and watch something, which it just grows increasingly more rare as we go along, because there's just so many other options that other people watch. We don't really have that opportunity to sit down and watch something as a community, as a culture. And I still try to put my finger on what exactly why the Super Bowl still has that staying power. Do you guys have any sort of theory as to why that is?
It's hard to put your finger on outside of the fact that, I don't know. I mean, it just, it feels like it's the number one overall sport, the most consumed sport for a variety of reasons, whether you want to point to fantasy and the implications or just from a grassroots perspective, how important football is in general in a lot of communities. I think the other thing is no one really has been able to challenge it. I think, you know, if you look at the NBA, you look at America's pastime, there's a reason why we call baseball that, granted, different time of the year, but you know, even hockey, I've got a brother-in-law that's playing in the NHL right now, and they were off on Sunday. You know, I was watching the game with them. So, like, you kind of go back and looking like other sports don't even want to try to compete with it. I was almost going to say, you know, as we look for other ways of continuing to grow viewership, and I know this was kicked around during Super Bowl week, Tyler. I'm not sure if you saw this, and LeJay, I'm not sure if you heard this narrative, but and I think it was Dan Patrick who talked about, hey, what about a Saturday Super Bowl? It feels odd. Like, can you say – you can't say Super Bowl Sunday anymore. It's now really Super Bowl Saturday, but there's an element of like, could you get more people to even tune in if it's a Saturday versus a Sunday? Because that 6:30 kickoff time, that's not really 6:30, then might make some people on the East Coast, especially depending on the game, the flow, all that. Maybe they go to bed. They're not watching all the way through. You know, that's a reality of it. And I think there's some people who obviously in the West Coast, it's a little different considering it starts at 3:30 on, you know, their time, but I do wonder if they would be willing to tweak the days potentially, if that's ever a factor or consideration for helping to continue to grow viewership, even though it would take away from the feeling of Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, it's not like a 24-hour period is going to be that big of a difference in regards to rest for the players, considering they have the week off prior.
Well, when you look at it too, I think one thing we could say for sure, Tyler, that football is king. And Brady, you make a good point of potentially moving it to Saturday, because the NFL has already kind of flirted with that, right? This year we saw a Black Friday game, and you talked about it, Brady, like other sports can't even come close to competing. If anything, the NFL is taking over other sports' holidays. Like, let's not forget, right? Black Friday was always synonymous with college football, right? There was a lot of – it's rivalry weekend, and a lot of rivals play on that Black Friday. And now you look at Christmas, that was always the NBA holiday. NFL say, you know what? We want a little piece of that too. And the viewership was out of the water compared to what the NBA got. So I just think no matter what, football is king in America. That's actually a really intriguing idea to move it to Saturday, because to your point, a lot of people on the East Coast, right, that game doesn't end until around midnight. You got to go to work the next day. I know a lot of people are flirting with saying, shouldn't Monday be a national holiday in America for everybody to be off because the Super Bowl is so late?
Yeah, I think that there was one where I think there was a theory out there that if they go to another week's schedule, if they go to like a 18-game schedule, that you could push it out to maybe like, what is it, President's Day, and you give that everybody the day off or something along those lines. But that's always been kind of floated around. But, you know, next year, the Super Bowl is in New Orleans. It's on Fox. That is going to be, again, New Orleans is a great host city. Vegas was great as well, but how does the NFL top itself? How, you know, can it's tough, right? Because the NFL has to hope for a great matchup like they got this year, and nobody saw the Taylor Swift thing coming. How do you think, LeJay, do they do that in 2024?
Who's the next big celebrity, LeJay?
Exactly. They gotta find another relationship to cling on to. I mean, this was literally like everybody talks about script writing, right? This was script writing for the NFL. For Taylor Swift and one of the faces of the NFL, Travis Kelce, to get together. I think that, along with the matchup, like you talked about, Tyler, it's going to be hard for next year's Super Bowl to top that. Now, I'm trying to think, because I don't think there's a celebrity music-wise that's on the realm of Taylor Swift right now for you to even be able to put that out there. So it's like, how do you top what just happened this year? Unless Kansas City goes back again, which they could, right? And then you're thinking, maybe if the 49ers go again, now we have really like the Buffalo Bills and the Dallas Cowboys from the 90s. To me, that's probably the only way you could top that.
You got to like find like Taylor Swift's rival, maybe. I don't know.
I'm like Kanye West. I mean,
it does feel like the NFL has combined like what was, I guess, is one of the longest running series of like the Bachelor or Bachelorette with like football. I mean, you go back to originally like, hey, why is the viewership up? Well, obviously Taylor Swift, but there were so many thoughts of what was going to happen after the game, especially if Kansas City won. Like, people were like, oh, yeah, Travis Kelce is going to propose. This is the Fiesta Bowl. This is Oklahoma, Boise State, but on steroids. And Boise State's going to end up winning the game. And we're going to see the proposal at the end. Like, it had all those, like, thoughts to it. Like, this is actually how it's going to be scripted out and going to end. And so it's kind of funny whether it's legitimate or not. I don't care. It's kind of fun just to see all the drama surrounding it. But it does feel like it was a natural blend of like bachelor, bachelorette type discussions and pop culture with football. And I don't know how you increase it from there. I'd say this, going back to your initial question, Ty, like the one thing I think the NFL has over every other sport is there's so much on the line for each one of the games. It's one of the reasons when you brought up the 18-game schedule that I do become a little bit worrisome of, will there be viewer fatigue? I mean, Mark Cuban had mentioned it a while back as the NFL started to encroach on the NBA season schedule, like Leger kind of pointed out to with Christmas. Like if I'm the NBA, I might as well just move my start of the season to the week after the Super Bowl. Just give up.
Might as well.
Yeah. That would be best for your sport. But the point kind of sits at, like, if you do start playing too many games in the regular season, does it take away from viewership there? Does it take away from, you know, really what matters most is they're not playing 80-plus games or 160-plus games. They're playing 17 regular season, and then it's all on the line in the playoffs. And I think there's something that resonates with a lot of people about that, where, you know, as much as the owners want to continue to keep building on these massive TV contracts, there's an element of like scarcity that I think plays to it too. Like I'm in depression right now. I'm sure you guys are in depression. I mean, the only reason it's a full, you know, full year calendar for the NFL is because they found a way of propping up this thing called the draft, and they make the free agency a big deal. Like where else in the world are we like, dude, I can't wait till the guys come in. They're going to replace the guys that I love. You know? Like where else do we talk about that?
It's
like
literally a holiday.
Yeah, like we watch the draft. Like guess what? This is where the guy goes. He's gonna replace my favorite player one day. Like it's just the whole thing's bizarre, but the NFL can pretty much, you know, sell ice to, you know, to an Eskimo at this point with the way they've been able to promote everything within its confines.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think if Kansas City's going for like a three-peat or something like that, then sure, I think that's probably what boosts it. But and I was curious too, real quickly, we'll put a pin in this, but I thought that it was going to be interesting in terms of fatigue when we're going from the Thanksgiving to Black Friday to Sunday football to Monday night football. I did kind of feel it a little bit, but I don't know if it was enough to get a real good sense of all that. But that remains to be seen. I do want to touch, though, as we look forward to this offseason, we're going to go in a couple of different angles, but I do want to look at one possible rule change. And Leger, I think you're going to be a great resource for this, is the hip drop tackle. I think that's something that owners are going to look at, and it's been a hot button issue, and it could be a potential rule change this year. Could you tell us, kind of take a step by step, what is a hip drop tackle? Why is it being talked about as this dangerous play? And just give us your quick thoughts on it.
Yeah, so let me preface this by saying a hip drop tackle is a regular tackle in the NFL. Now, again, this is the NFL, Brady, and you can attest to this. Like 100% injury rate is what happens in the NFL. And for a player that's chasing a player from behind, whether it's a ball carrier, receiver, a quarterback, the player's momentum is going forward, right? And if you're a player behind trying to tackle him and prevent him from getting extra yards, well, you automatically, and it's just by nature, you're going to drop your hip to stop him from going forward. So that's why they call it a hip drop tackle. Now, we've seen a lot of players hit their knee and ankle because of this. But at the end of the day, what is a defender supposed to do while they're fighting to try to help their defense get off the field? This guy's momentum's taking him forward. I just think, again, there's so many rules to try to make the game safer. I think at one point, we're just going to take all the physicality out of the game if we continue to add different rules. Now, I understand this, right? You're trying for player safety. I get that. But what about the defender that's trying to make, you know, a way for his family, who's trying to make a play for his defense to get off the field, to help try to win the game? We know it's an offensive league and all that, but I don't know how you can implement that tackle, because when I'm chasing a guy from behind, I'm not thinking, well, I got to specifically tackle him like this, Brady, to get him on the ground. No, I'm trying to get him down as quick as possible before he gains extra yardage. So, again, Tyler, I know this has been a strong point of discussion going into this offseason about the hip drop tackle. That's how Tony Pollard got hurt in the playoffs last year versus the San Francisco 49ers. Again, I don't know how you implement that and tell defenders, where it's already so hard to play defense in the NFL, to think about making a tackle, because that's actually when you get hurt, Brady. When you're thinking too much instead of playing fast, that's when players get hurt.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the question, Tyler, is so much onus of player safety is placed on the defense in helping to protect offensive players. And I think because of that, we've actually seen injuries arise for the defensive players. Yep. I mean, for example, you know, now you have to land a certain way on a quarterback. Can't put all your body weight on him. We've seen defensive linemen get hurt trying to brace themselves as they fall so they don't land completely on the quarterback. I mean, look, I'm a former quarterback. Like, I get it. We're trying to protect the faces of the league, but there is an element of physicality. There's an element of toughness that goes into it that, you know, we're not helping quarterbacks out by forcing them to play with a sense of timing and rhythm to get the ball out. I mean, they shouldn't be holding on to the football as long sometimes as they are. And that leads to them getting hit and getting hit and landed on by a defensive lineman. So, you know, we're creating all these rules, and like the onus is on the defensive player. I mean, even the, you know, receivers who are catching a pass across the middle now are considered defenseless. And so you have a certain window in which you can hit them. You can't hit them above the shoulders to the head neck area. So then what do we see as a result of that? We see guys getting their ACLs and their knees blown out because guys are going low. And so there's always going to be a cause and effect. So to Legere's point, with the game becoming more spread out, there's more three wide receiver sets. It forces defenders to have to play and tackle with angles. And the problem with that is if you do take a bad angle, you do get behind the player, as he's pointing out, you're in a tough position where the only way to stop him is grab him and kind of drop your hip, literally, which usually will end up on their legs in this sort of hip drop tackle. So there, I have two issues with that. First, and I've talked to a former NFL running back and Mark Ingram about that, because I was like curious to get his thoughts on how he feels. And one of the things he said to me was, hey, my pops played. And one of the things he always said to me was, when you feel a guy hanging on you like that, when you start to feel like you're going down, throw your legs up, because that's going to help protect them from getting caught up in the turf. And the first thing that dawned on me was like, one, how smart that was. But two, you know, that's how offensive players then have to adjust to the way defensive players are being asked to adjust with the way they're asked to be to tackle nowadays. And that leads me to the next point. If you look at the way everyone talks about rugby style tackles, right? I was with Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks back in 2013. They bring in, you know, one of the best rugby teams. And they're talking about, hey, this is how we want to tackle. We want to do this rugby style tackle where it's the side of our head. We're using our shoulder. We're going to attack the hips. We're going to stop the motor at the legs. And that's how we're going to wrap and roll. Okay, that's great in theory, but let's think about that for a second. Why do rugby players not use the front of their face to make that tackle on a player in rugby? They don't have a face mask.
Yes, they don't have a helmet on.
Of course they're not going to tackle like that because they don't have anything protecting them. Correct. And the reality is, when you talk about tackling and protecting yourself, you're talking about keeping your spine at a neutral angle. Anytime you turn your head one way or another, you're bending even at the cervical spine, or you're potentially putting yourself more at risk for stingers, other neck injuries, and concussions. Right. Look, I'm not a neurologist, but I had enough concussions that I had to go to different specialists because of those concussions to learn that the strongest part of your brain, your chrome, is the front of your head.
Yep.
Most concussions happen to the side and back of your head where you don't feel it, see it coming. And so we have actually, because we keep teaching this rugby style of tackling, we're actually exposing defenders to getting hit in the side of the head and more stingers, in my opinion, concussions that come as a result of that. Instead of trying to get them to square up and keep their spine at a neutral angle where they're seeing what they hit with their head up to drive through the ball carrier. Mm. So I know it's a long-winded answer to this whole hip drop tackle discussion, but I think it paints a light on why the hip drop is even a part of it now, why you're seeing it, in my opinion, so much more than what we saw in the past. It's a lot of the ways we're teaching defensive players to tackle nowadays because we're eliminating some of the ways in which they can tackle, they're supposed to tackle. And so I know it's a really long, nuanced answer, but I don't know that you're going to see it go anywhere because I think we're limiting so much defensive players and their ability to do their job, as Legere put it simply.
Well, it's a great point, and it's something that kind of reminds me of what happened this year, and it's something that's kind of been highlighted recently. It's tough for defensive players already, and then when you start to implement these types of rules, it just has you think about 50 other different things other than making the play. And one thing that I noticed this year was the quarterback almost faking like they're about to slide and then stay up. Like Josh Allen did it. I know Kenny Pickett did it at Pitt. That's kind of the example that I keep going back to here to be like, okay, you can alter these rules so much, but then all of a sudden these offensive players might start to take advantage of it.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I honestly think that should be a penalty, right? Because sure. Brady, you could speak to this, like, as a defender, like, I'm just saying, just listen, Brady, like, if you go for the fake slide, right, and if I continue to play, like, I know for sure I'm getting a flag, right? 15-yard penalty, going to be a first down. But if you go for the fake slide and I pull up and you take off for a touchdown, my coach is going to be yelling at me. But it's just like, what do I do? Because like you said, the rules have been so slanted on the offensive favor, which I get it. As a quarterback, you want to take advantage of that. But don't complain when on the next play a defender lets loose on you and you're asking for a flag. So that's the cause and effect of it, because you talked about it, Tyler. Like, Josh Allen did it. After that play, we would have been headhunting for the rest of the game. Like, my thing is, if they're already calling it so tight, I can barely touch the quarterback. Now you're going to fake slide, and I'm nervous about getting a penalty and keeping my defense on the field. And not only that, Brady, getting fined for it as well, like taking money out of my pocket. Now you want to fake slide? Like, come on, man. What are we doing?
I'm with you. I don't like the fact that some of these rules to protect players are now being abused. It's no different than wide receivers becoming defenseless in the process of making a catch. Yeah. You know, this has allowed quarterbacks to make tight throws in the tight windows across the middle. We're back in the old days. Guys wouldn't do it because they get their heads taken off. Yeah. But we're trying to make it a more offensive game. Fantasy is a big part of it. We like seeing overs. We like seeing a lot of scoring. So that's kind of where we're at. This is like juicing the baseballs, if you want, in Major League Baseball, or try to, they were looking the other way when some steroids are going on, right? Back to the glory days of home runs and all that. So, like, I understand the reason why. I think a penalty is a little punitive, but I do think that, anytime a quarterback or any other ball carrier like gets to the outside like that, it has to be pretty clear and obvious they're giving themselves up. Like, we have so much subjectivity in how we go about officiating games. There's times when I'm like, look, if it's a gray area, don't throw a flag. Like, you don't need to, because there's oftentimes guys are sliding too late, or it's kind of looks a little bit gray and the defender's already committed. And I think the pendulum needs to swing back towards the defense, where we start to give the defenders the benefit of the doubt. And if it ends up being a gray area where the offensive player gets hurt due to that hit, that's on them if they decide to slide late or they don't take care of themselves, earlier than they should have. So I understand your concern. A penalty is a bit punitive. It's like, if we're getting,
because it's going to be a penalty if he hits him. That's why I say that.
Into the flopping realm of like the NBA, and I hate that. So like,
we're already there. How many times have you seen quarterbacks do one of these, like, and get a flag, Brady? Like,
First off, we see more punters and kickers do that than anyone else.
Right? I see you defending your guys.
Hey, we see defensive players do that, and linemen do that with the whole last touch thing. They touch the guy. And he acts
you gotta make it. You got to do your Anderson Varejao to make it even.
Yeah, sure.
Well, that's the league stuff, I think it's going to be interesting to see how all those things kind of play out. But we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go a little bit more into player movement and all of that stuff that could change the NFL by the time we get there in week one of the 2024 season coming up.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to the Pick Six podcast, and we just touched a little bit upon, defensive players versus offensive players. We're going to transition now into more of the offensive side, because we do know that this league is quarterback driven, and there's probably going to be a lot of quarterback movement this offseason. So we're going to play a little bit of game of, staying put, getting paid, getting drafted, all the above. We're going to look at some of these situations, try to hit as many as we can about these quarterbacks, and kind of take the temperature about what these situations could actually unfold. First up, we're going to go to Denver. We're going to look at Russell Wilson. Kind of had a weird end to his season, was benched for Jarrett Stidham. It was contract related because there was a clause in his deal where if he got hurt, they'd owe him some guaranteed money and all of that. But now we're starting to wonder whether or not, will he get cut? Will he get traded? Will he stay with Denver? Legere, we'll start with you. What do you think the fate is for Russell Wilson this offseason?
Yeah, I don't believe, Brady, there's any way that this relationship can be salvaged. I honestly think Denver is willing to pay him, I think it's what, about $70-something million dollars, to let him not walk, but release him and just start over fresh. Let's not forget, Russell Wilson, when he got traded, it was before, you know, Sean Payton was there as head coach, right? So he didn't get to choose his quarterback. And we saw that weird scenario at the end of the year where they decided to bench him for the last two games. I kind of kidded about this, Brady, earlier this season. I said, if Jarrett Stidham comes to your team in free agency, it's the kiss of death. Let's not forget, the same scenario happened with Derek Carr just the year before. Last two games, they bench him, then release him. So if we're going by that standard, it looks like the same thing could happen to Russell Wilson. Now, again, Russell Wilson will be, you know, compensated welly for his release if he is to leave Denver. But from just hearing what Sean Payton had to say, we actually had him during the Super Bowl. I believe, Brady, were you on air when Sean Payton was there, or no, when we interviewed him during the Super Bowl?
No, I was not.
Okay, yeah. So I saw that interview, and to me, it just seems like that relationship, I don't think it can be mended.
Yeah, I don't know if there was really much of a relationship even beforehand. It feels like that was kind of a forced marriage, if you will, because it really wasn't going to change what they would owe him, whether they cut him when he first got there or if they tried to cut him after the season. I would say this, you know, Russell Wilson's cap hit, Tyler, it's not that punitive. I mean, if we're looking at starting quarterback standards in the NFL, comparatively speaking, I mean, Russell Wilson has won a Super Bowl. He's been to two. He's played some really good football in his career and played pretty well last year. Like, I don't know that he was the problem in Denver, which makes the whole benching a little bit curious, only because I don't think Jarrett Stidham gave them a better chance to win. I was still curious why the NFLPA wasn't able to figure out a way of kind of contesting that more, because it did feel like it was contractual in nature, which, you know, again, should be against
illegal.
Illegal. Yeah. In that case, though, again, maybe there still is a trade partner out there. I mean, clearly his contract would need restructuring in the future. You know, one place that I think if you look at the tea leaves as to how the season ended for them is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
You know, I know they drafted Kenny Pickett in the first round, but he was healthy enough to be the backup. You thought he could have been healthy enough to either start in the playoffs or even at the end of the season. And the fact they didn't start him, they started Mason Rudolph. Yeah, we can talk about it being the hot hand, but maybe they've already made their decision on him. Mm-hmm. And if that is the case, if I'm Russell Wilson, I'm like, dude, put me on that team, right? They got weapons on the outside. The offensive line's improved. They have a good defense. And I think you put him in there with Mike Tomlin, who's been a winner his entire career as a head coach. It's a winning formula for you if you're looking to kind of revamp your career. So, you know, and then if you look at the structure of the contract, yeah, again, it's a lot of money, but that's also an organization that doesn't necessarily delve out big signing bonuses. So maybe they'd be willing to work with the structure of the contract and kind of extend it out or restructure however they see fit to make it work. Atlanta's another team, obviously, that needs a quarterback this offseason. Yeah. Could make some sense. But I don't know that there's a 0% chance he gets traded. I think it's probably more likely he gets released. But I would think that if Denver could get something back for him, they'd obviously would rather go that route than maybe allowing him to go sign somewhere else. But again, that would probably fall into, Tyler, the conversation of compensatory picks. And you know better how that works than we do.
Legit. Yeah. Yeah, just to finish the sentence real quick. Week one, Russell Wilson is the starting quarterback for blank.
I'm going to say, and it's funny that Brady mentioned those two teams because those were the two teams I circled. I'm going to say the Atlanta Falcons. I think it just makes a little bit more sense. The Atlanta Falcons, Raheem Morris there. Zach Robinson comes over as the OC. And where they're at in the draft, I believe they're number 7 seed. So you're going to probably miss out on the top 3 quarterbacks in this draft, Brady. And if you look at their team, right, as far as that division being one of the weakest divisions in all of football, get Russell Wilson there. You have weapons on the outside with Drake London. Now, they haven't been able to get the most out of Kyle Pitts, so hopefully, you know, Coach Robinson can do that in Atlanta now. And then Bijan Robinson in the backfield. I think that's a team whose defense actually played pretty well last year. Raheem Morris is probably going to add a couple pieces on the outside there. Maybe even in the draft, Dallas Turner at that number 7 spot probably makes a lot of sense for them as an edge defender. I think taking Russell Wilson there, a guy that's played a lot of football, to your point, Brady, he's won a lot in the NFL. I think it makes a lot of sense if you're not able to get the franchise future quarterback in the first round that you truly want. Maybe Russell Wilson's a bridge guy for the Atlanta Falcons.
By the way, Sierra, like, I mean, do I think maybe like she wouldn't want to be back in the ATL?
Yay! Run the fan time. Base, you know, bring some more fans.
Yeah,
to the stadium.
Yeah, it's kind of saying like maybe, you know, maybe that makes more sense there. I don't know.
It's not bad, not bad. I like.
I mean, the other end of that, you already know the beef with the ex and all that, so that might play a role in that too.
And then it is
a big time for him too.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Russell Wilson, Atlanta or Pittsburgh. I think those are two really intriguing
makes a lot of sense,
landing spots. I think it's a great one. Now, you talked about the NFL draft there. Let's just go all the way up to the number one overall pick with Chicago. Should they draft Caleb Williams at number one or build around Justin Fields? It's probably one of the most talked about questions going into this offseason. Legere, what do you think?
I think you have to take Caleb Williams there. And I say this because of this, Brady. Like, if you stay with Justin Fields, you're going to be asking him to learn three new offenses in 4 years. When they decided to release Luke Getsy of his services, to me, the writing was on the wall that they were going to go all in and get Caleb Williams and try to find a draft partner for Justin Fields. Now, the interesting thing is, Brady, I've heard rumors out of Chicago that they don't want to trade him in the NFC, which I get. But my thing is, it's just like, if the NFC offers you the best package, are you not going to trade him to the NFC? Like, say the Atlanta Falcons, which makes a lot of sense as well because he's from that area, right? Would make a lot of sense for ticket sales. A lot of Georgia fans in that area, even though he did go to Ohio State eventually. I think it makes a lot of sense for them to trade for Justin Fields as well. Now, if you trade for Fields, I believe he has, 2 years left on his deal? He has the fourth year and the fifth year option. So you would think maybe a deal needs to get done sooner or later. But I just think, with them firing Luke Getsy, getting a new offensive coordinator, and I think the writing was on the wall that they're most likely trading Justin Fields and taking Caleb Williams one overall.
I think it's interesting, too. We kind of look at him as like this two-year window. I mean, if you really want to play it out, you could play out the franchise tags in multiple years, too.
That is true.
You'd like to be able to say, like, hey, we've seen enough to be able to commit to him long-term if that's the case. So maybe that's still a consideration. How about this for a wild card? Because I think, Tyler, as you kind of presented it, there's like two options, right? It's like we either stay put, take Caleb Williams, trade Justin Fields, or, you know, we trade back, we keep Justin Fields, we build around him. What if there is a scenario where Ryan Poles looks at these quarterbacks, and maybe he's got a similar grade on Drake May or Jaden Daniels. Maybe he thinks they're the best quarterback this draft class. What if there's a scenario where they trade back, get a bounty of picks, still get the rookie quarterback they want, and trade Justin Fields as well? No.
Oh, okay.
Because you're taking a rookie quarterback with trading back while still accumulating those picks and getting more picks for Justin Fields. Like, I'm really curious because I think when you talk to different teams, everyone's got quarterbacks ranked in different ways. Everyone has like their favorite. And I talked to a team earlier this season that they like Drake May as the number one quarterback this draft class. I'm like, all right, interesting. Because at that point in time, he hadn't played a ton this season, but he didn't have the best season. Now, granted, didn't have great protection, defense struggled, not a lot of guys to throw to. There's all those reasons and justification for it. I still think he's up there next to Caleb Williams as the best, second best quarterback in this draft class. But some people might watch what Jaden Daniels did and say, man, that's a guy that I think I can win a Super Bowl with. He had a Heisman Trophy winning season. He's improved as a passer. He continues to improve. You know, if that's the case, maybe that's the third option that's a part of all this as they're sorting through who could be their quarterback of the future. It might not just be between Justin Fields and Caleb Williams. Maybe there's an option number three in there too.
No, it's a great point because, I mean, just look at the team that's number two overall in the Commanders. Their new offensive coordinator, Cliff Kingsbury obviously was with him at USC. That would make a lot of sense. One thing that I do think that it doesn't happen a lot in the NFL, but I always wondered why it doesn't. You know, we don't necessarily know with these quarterbacks. I mean, we saw the 49ers trade up for Trey Lance thinking that was going to be a great thing. That was a swing and the miss. It's so hard to figure out what these quarterbacks are going to be. Are you ever surprised that you don't see like a team like Chicago take Caleb Williams and just keep Justin Fields and have them duke it out?
That's another option, right? I mean, I remember once upon a time, you go back and look at that quarterback room in Green Bay, and I know we're now in recent history saying, oh, yeah, you had Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love. You know, that's worked out really well so far. At least it seems like it's going to. It clearly worked out between Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Yep. But you look a little bit before that, like who was on that roster. If I'm not mistaken, Tyler, I'm pretty sure they had Mark Brunell on that roster. I think Detmer was on that roster, you know, back when Brett Favre first got there. Like,
I think Hasselbeck too, right?
Hasselbeck was there, I think, early on in his career. Yeah. I mean, they were stacked. Like, that's – you look at, you know, the San Francisco 49ers with Joe Montana and Steve Young. we've seen it happen before. I mean, we've seen even Alex Smith go in there as a Pro Bowl quarterback and, you know, for a year, Patrick Mahomes, who looks to be like he's on the path to be maybe the greatest ever, sat for a year. So it's not that uncommon. Maybe that's option four, if you will, of the possibilities of what Chicago could do, where then that kind of allows them to never be wrong in whatever their decision may be. And it provides them a nice little insurance policy. No matter how you look at it, I think that's probably an underrated way of looking at the quarterback position. The tough part is only one guy's plays, and it's a delicate room to be in when you think about all these alpha personalities, strong personalities. You know, from my experience, like I was a guy that wanted to play, you know, as much as I was, you know, obviously helpful to the defense, helpful to the other guys in the room that are in the quarterback room. Like I was there to play. I wasn't there to sit and, you know, hold a clipboard or listen to plays and, you know, be the insurance policy as a backup. And so it became hard for me to be able to sit and watch after playing so much throughout my entire life up to that point. So finding that dynamic and the right, you know, combination of personalities in a quarterback room is tough. And it's why you see sometimes these guys who've barely started, barely played many games that hang on for years because they've got a solidified starter and they've got that guy loves them and they don't want them to have to, you know, be with anyone else that's a backup, you know, that's in that room. And so it'll be tough to see if that combination happened or could work because usually in today's age, it's just you're playing that guy if you take him in the first round. And so it's difficult.
And then the last quarterback that I want to touch on here is Tua Tagovailoa. He's obviously up for a contract. I think he's a quarterback that's going to kind of be in a hairy situation a little bit, it almost feels like. Especially last year, there was questions that whether or not they were even going to pick up his fifth-year option. Legere, what do you think is a reasonable contract? Is this just is he just the next man up so he gets the highest-paid contract, or is there a little bit more nuance to it?
Well, Brady can attest to this. You are what the market value says you are, right? Look at Daniel Jones's deal, right? So, like, him being the next big guy out there, and it's kind of even weird to say this, him being the next healthy guy, right? Because Kirk Cousins is in that discussion, but he probably won't be able to start the year as your starting quarterback. So, like, when you look at the top available guys, and Tua technically is not available because he's got the fifth-year option, right? A lot of people are asking, should Miami just let him play that out? Because we've only seen 1 year of him actually being healthy. And then there was a crazy rumor that I saw, Brady, that people were saying that they should trade Tua and pay Kirk Cousins because the deal's not going to be as big or as many years. So you could get Kirk Cousins for like 2 or 3 years instead of a 4 or 5 year deal with Tua Tagovailoa. And I sat back and I thought, and I was like, actually, it's not a crazy idea. Now, I don't think Mike McDaniel and Greer are going to do that, but there's a lot of question marks in Miami, right? They're going to have to retool their offensive line. They lost Vic Fangio on the defensive side. Guys like Xavier and Howard most likely are probably going to be cap casualties on that team. Him, Emmanuel Ogba, Christian Wilkins still wants to get paid as well. So this is an interesting scenario for the Miami Dolphins because you know this, Brady, as a business, you want to protect yourself, right? Again, Tua only had the one healthy year. So, like, do you feel comfortable giving him a 5-year deal where 4 of it is like almost guaranteed because of the upfront money? Or do you wait and play out the 5th-year option and revisit it, knowing that he can make so much more money if he goes out there and balls again? That's the scenario you're in. To me, I would let him play out the 5th-year option and then take care of the deal at the end of the next season.
I think there's a lot of there's a number of things to consider when you're looking at an extension for Tua Tagovailoa. If we took out the injury concerns. If I said to you, Tylan Legere, we're not concerned about his injury history, okay, you're probably looking at him a lot more favorably. Yeah. The way he started his career, where Brian Flores kept jerking him in and out, in and out, it almost kind of like left this like question of like, okay, why is he doing that? And then you see him get paired with Mike McDaniel, and you see the success then that he's able to have when he's got a coach who believes in him and works with an offense around him. And as good as it's been for him to be with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, all these talented players, it still, though, leads people to question then, like, is he capable of being the guy because he's got so much talent around him? Is he a byproduct of the system, the talent? Is it both? And so I think that makes it difficult for them to then discern, you know, is he going to reset the market? Like, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think if he's offered a deal now, it's going to be north of Daniel Jones and know what that contract looked like. But I would imagine it's only going to be a couple years in guarantees, then kind of a we'll see, or we'll have to wait and see at that point. Yeah. And it will be more economical for, you know, what the Dolphins are looking for to keep some cap space to build around the, you know, this team and roster. but to kind of not put all their eggs in that basket. They could play this thing out too, and his representation might say, well, okay, then we're not going to agree to that deal. We'll play out, you know, throughout the fifth year and go on the franchise tags if we have to as well. And that's ultimately how you maximize your leverage. Yeah. But it comes with great risk because of his injury history. So maybe he's more likely to take a lesser deal. Either way, I think he's been a great pairing with Mike McDaniel. I'm excited to see what, as they continue to grow, what it looks like in this offense. The more he plays, the more he has a coach that believes in him, what it looks like. But I don't think he's resetting the market. This isn't that sort of deal. I think you'll see him get, obviously, a nine-figure deal when it's all said and done for that extension. But, again, not one that we're going to look back and say, okay, now he's surpassing the Joe Burrows of the world or the Patrick Mahomes of the world.
Or Herberts,
Yeah, I would agree with that. And even if he does land a huge extension, I think it's going to be, like you said, north of Daniel Jones, north of Geno Smith. And I almost feel like you'll hear a huge number, and then like the 2 days later when the actual numbers come out and the guarantees and all of that, you'll say, okay, they can actually maybe get out of this in 2-3 years and with certain, you know, maneuvers and all of that. But I want to put a pin on the quarterback talk because, again, there's other stuff that we want to talk about here this offseason as well. First and foremost, the Kansas City Chiefs. They just won their third Super Bowl in 5 years. They are the team that clearly has the target on their back. Who do you think is their biggest challenger? And who do you think, or I should say, how do you topple this team? Like, you know, is it even possible to take this team down, Brady?
Yeah, of course. I mean, but I think as we've kind of found out, you have to have a quarterback who can make plays in the final moments to win you a game. Yeah. Very similar to what Patrick Mahomes can do. I mean, that's what it really boils down to in the end. And so I think if you're looking at the AFC, there's, you know, probably five guys that stand out because that conference is loaded with quarterbacks. The first is Joe Burrow, who's had success versus Patrick Mahomes. So that's the first that kind of comes to mind. You look at Josh Allen, even though he's lost out to Patrick Mahomes, it's been some great battles between the two. I think Lamar Jackson's up there. Healthy Aaron Rodgers with the Jets. Once we see him get back into it, we'll see what they're capable of. And the last one, and probably the most interesting, is within their own division. That's Justin Herbert. Because I think with Jim Harbaugh coaching that team, it'll be a more balanced team, one that kind of owns the trenches. And it's not going to force Justin Herbert to have to be the hero every single series, just in the big moments when he needs to be. And he's clearly got that sort of ability to do so. So I think it's like really those five teams. I think when you look at the way they're constructed, the way they're coached, and then finally, obviously, who they have at quarterback, that to me looks to be the biggest challenges for them moving forward. I wish I could say San Francisco, and maybe this is like recency bias, but we've seen it now twice in Super Bowls. And it just feels like, and this isn't a knock against Brock Purdy or Jimmy Garoppolo, but, you know, and because Purdy had what was, you know, talked about as an MVP season this year. Until we see him take those big strides and be able to get over the hump of beating Patrick Mahomes, I just don't know what we're going to look at them as a contender, at least as far as stopping Patrick Mahomes getting to another Super Bowl.
Yeah, I like the teams that you mentioned. I'll actually throw one more in there, and they might be 2 years away from doing it. The Houston Texans, right, with the money they have, with the quarterback that they have in C.J. Stroud, and we saw him take a receiving core that going into the season, a lot of people – would never thought that Nico Collins would be a true number one or Tank Dell would come on and have the type of season that he had. And we saw DeMeco Ryans change the culture of that defense, right? They were awful against the run. They were one of the top teams stopping the run this year. Now, again, a lot of those guys signed one-year deals, so they'll have to do some business. Jonathan Greenard is a free agent as well. But they have a ton of cap space to make some moves. And the great thing is, Brady, they have a rookie quarterback, so they have a quarterback on a rookie deal. So they don't have to play C.J. Stroud for at least two more seasons going into his fourth season. So that's a team I think maybe not next year, but the year after. But on the NFC side, how about a team that beat them in week one of the season? The Detroit Lions, right? I think that's a team that, you know, a lot of people said, if not for the aggressive nature of their coach Dan Campbell, they most likely are in the Super Bowl versus the Kansas City Chiefs. So when you look at the way that they're constructed from the inside out, I think if you add another edge guy to pair with Aiden Hutchinson, we know they have one of the best offensive lines in football. The biggest thing for the Lions is they're going to have to do deals with their own players, right? Penei Sewell can get a new deal this offseason. Amon-Ra St. Brown could get a new deal. Those are two guys that are foundational pieces. And we've seen Jared Goff. A lot of people thought he would be a bridge quarterback going to the Detroit Lions. He's proven that he is the future franchise quarterback for that team. You heard Dan Campbell said, you're good enough for us, right? It felt like the Rams put him on a scrap pile, right? That he was going to Detroit to die, and he resurrected his career. I think them getting their offensive coordinator Ben Johnson back was another big win for them as well. So I think the Detroit Lions are a team that could push the Kansas City Chiefs. But until somebody does it, it's hard to bet against Patrick Mahomes,
man. And if we do open it up to the NFC, I'm curious to see your guys' opinion on the Eagles, because it's an offseason where it felt like for a minute that Nick Sirianni was certainly on the hot seat, and obviously they've redone the coordinator positions. How do you feel that that's going to impact them this season?
Well, it was tough for them this season. I can't remember, and Brady, you can attest to this. Like, when you lose not one coordinator but two coordinators, right, there's an adjustment period, right? So, like, they lost their offensive coordinator, Shane Steichen, who did a wonderful job with the Colts. And then, and if you look at what Jonathan Gannon did with the Arizona Cardinals, yeah, they didn't win a lot of games, but that team fought every single week, right? And the future looks bright there. So when you lose those two guys and you lose two starting safeties, two linebackers, like, there's an adjustment period. Even though you bring your core of offensive players back, we knew it was going to be an adjustment period, and it'll be an adjustment period this year, right? Brady, you know this, when you change schemes every single year, the team has to get used to that person calling the games. Like, it's an art form to call an offensive and defensive play. So, and then there's all type of rumors with AJ Brown coming out of the locker room. Supposedly Hassan Reddick is asking for a trade. So this is an interesting spot for the Philadelphia Eagles going into the offseason. We know when the season ends like the way it did, Brady, nobody's feeling good about themselves, right? Like, things creep up when you start losing games, and that's what happened for the Philadelphia Eagles at the end of the year. So right now, just because of the way the season ended and there's a lot of unresolved issues going into the offseason, I would not put them at the top of one of those teams in the NFC that could push the Chiefs for a Super Bowl.
I'm on the opposite side here. I'm very bullish about where I feel like the Eagles will be next year and bouncing back. I mean, Howie Roseman has a great track record of stacking this roster and giving them an opportunity through the draft, free agency, of having enough depth and playmakers to make things happen. They're a little bit snake bit this year with some injuries, but to me, it was more the inexperience of the coordinators that they elevated and put in those positions. I mean, neither Sean Desai or even Brian Johnson really worked as play callers. They didn't have much experience in the first place, which I think hurt them. And that's why they went ahead and opened up the checkbook to pay Vic Fangio, who's one of the best defensive minds in the NFL, along with Kellen Moore. He's got a great proven track record, too, of being able to put up a lot of points, production, and numbers. So this is a team that I think rebounds this year, in particular in the NFC, and will be right there next to San Francisco and trying to compete to get to that spot to play against the Kansas City Chiefs, who are going to try to three-peat. And if you look at the NFC picture in general, much easier path for both those two teams trying to work through the NFC to then get to a Super Bowl as compared to the AFC, which is loaded with talented quarterbacks and a lot of really good football teams.
Go ahead,
LeJay. I push back on that just because we saw what happened with Vic Fangio in Miami, right? Now, again,
also a lot of respect. That was decimated with injury on the edge.
Yeah, but when you start hearing the players come out and talk about some of the things he was asking them to do, and then also Jalen Ramsey feeling a way about not being able to travel with the number one guy. I liken it to the Bill Belichick conversation. Like, is he conducive to how NFL is played right now? Can he relate with some of those players? Now, I think Vic Fangio is a great defensive mind and has a track record, right? But when you're talking about different personalities and with these younger guys, is it conducive to how Vic Fangio coaches? Because, again, in Miami, yes, there were some injuries, but there was a lot of rumors, and I know players for sure that were not comfortable with him being the defensive coordinator and what he was asking them to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm not sure it matters, though, when it comes down to it, only because the reality is they weren't struggling necessarily defensively a lot this year. They had a lot of injuries that impacted that program and anything else, and I guess time will tell, you know, if Philadelphia is able to implement a lot of things that he's looking at doing. But it seemed like that was kind of a match made in heaven, because once he decided to move on from Miami, Philadelphia was very quick to sign him. And it also does address the fact that Kellen Moore will be a large improvement from what they had in Brian Johnson as an offensive play caller.
And sticking with coaching, obviously the head coaching cycle is done. Real quick, one word answer. You just pick the guy. You tell me which new coach is going to have the most success. LeJay, go ahead.
Ooh. It's hard not to say Jim Harbaugh.
Put you on the spot.
Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
I know, right? It's hard. You said one word answer. Like, that's tough, man.
I mean, look,
Jim
Harbaugh is one wherever he's gone. It took a little longer, I think, to get to the point he did at Michigan than maybe we thought. But, you know, he's able to turn around teams relatively quick. So you'd have to say with Herbert and that roster, despite the cap, you know, issues they've got, you'd have to say Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, that's where I would go as well. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to give you some storylines that could be flying under the radar that we'll highlight. And also, of course, it's Valentine's Day, so we got to, you know, tis the season, give you some treats that we'll get into as well.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back to the Pick Six podcast, and we're going over some big storylines that could happen this NFL offseason, and some might not even have gotten started yet. Maybe the seeds are just starting to be planted. So we're going to introduce a little segment here. We're going to predict what storylines will dominate this offseason discourse. Brady, Legay, you guys will give yours. I'll throw in mine as well. And I'll tell you that the Pick Six offseason storyline prediction segment is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Brady, what storyline do you think is going under the radar that's going to dominate this offseason?
Under the radar. Gosh, I don't know the one that's going under the radar. I was talking about this with someone earlier today. I hope whatever the Bears decide to do happens sooner than later. I don't want to have to keep talking about what may or may not happen with the first overall pick. Like, I know once we get to the combine, that's typically when everyone bumps into each other and they figure out what the trade compensation is going to be. It would just be nice to know. And clearly we're going to see that pick traded before we see Justin Fields traded because of how that process would work. And the Bears would be giving up leverage. But that's one that I think is for surely not under the radar, but going to dominate that up until the draft actually occurs. So I'm hoping that that one actually ends sooner than later so we can kind of move on and not have to continually deal with these conversations about it.
You guys are probably going to laugh at this one. I want to know what the San Francisco 49ers could typically do to get over the hump now. Like, I mentioned this earlier this week, and I think Brady was on the show. I mentioned this. Like, when you look at the Shanahan tree, going back to his dad, like, they are not afraid to ruffle some feathers and move some things around when it comes to the quarterback position. I think Brock Purdy can be a star in this league, but when you look at the rest of that roster, right, you can't get much better than what they had on paper when you talk about all the pros that they have. Like, let's not forget when Mike Shanahan was in Denver, they went 13-3 with Jake the Snake Plumber. That next year, he drafted a quarterback in the first round and Jay Cutler. They were 7-4. He benched Jake Plumber and put Jay Cutler in the starting lineup. I was on that team in 2017. Kyle Shanahan has an affinity for Kirk Cousins. Right now, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but could they feel like with Kirk Cousins, maybe that's the missing cog to get them over the hump for like a two-year deal and keep Brock Purdy there, and then something similar to a Jimmy Garoppolo deal in 2 years when Brock Purdy is a free agent? Maybe. So I that's my thing I want to look at. Plus, There's been some of these weird stories come out since the Super Bowl loss, like the thing with John Feliciano and Spencer Buford and blaming him in regards to missing the block that Brock Purdy could have threw to Juwan Jennings touchdown, the cryptic messages from Brandon Ayuk saying that he's not going to be back in San Francisco when he still has the fifth-year option there. So obviously when you lose, everything, you know, gets magnified tenfold. There's a lot of emotion and, you know, this Brady throughout the offseason, some of that will wane off. But it'll be interesting to see what type of moves the 49ers feel like they have to make to try to get over the hump.
Yeah, no, I love the Kirk Cousins angle. I mean, you know, this is a 49ers team that was looking into Tom Brady last offseason. Obviously, different circumstance because you didn't know what the status of Brock Purdy was going to be. But I think that would be, you know, a fascinating addition. But I do think that there's some salary cap implications, and that one just kind of goes into what I was going to bring up. And I think what's going to go under the radar, or at least right now, is going under the radar, I think this offseason could be dominated by wide receivers. I think that this could be a huge player movement wide receiver offseason. You have Mike Evans hitting free agency, T. Higgins hitting free agency. You mentioned, Lijay, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with A.J. Brown, Brandon Ayuk. You have Stephon Diggs possibly getting traded. Justin Jefferson is a great one to point out because he wants to see what Kirk Cousins does reportedly before he makes a decision on a long-term extension. I just think that that position could see some fireworks over the next couple of months.
And to add to that, right, this is one of the top receiving draft classes that we see in a while. I wonder how that affects free agency as well, because I think Mike Evans is going to get paid regardless. And the team, and we talk about the rich getting richer, that makes a lot of sense, is the Chiefs, right? Right. If there's rumors that Patrick Mahomes is going to rework his deal, could that be to be a team-friendly deal to add a guy like Mike? Just imagine Mike Evans and Travis Kelce with Patrick Mahomes, like, you don't think Mike Evans would take a little bit less to go to the Kansas City Chiefs to win a couple more rings? And then when you look at this draft class, it's probably going to be, what, five receivers going in the first round? How will that affect the free agency class of Gabe Davis, Michael Pittman, T. Higgins? I could see the Bengals tagging him and maybe potentially trading him just because Ja'Marr Chase is due for a deal as well.
I was just going to say, ask me about a month, because I feel like the franchise tag could be used on a number of these players. So. Yeah. We'll see where it goes from there. You know, it's funny, like offseason storylines, like I think we're going to continue to hear stories about, you know, what it means as the parade's going on today for the Kansas City Chiefs about three-peating, how they're going to get there. Like that's going to be one that continues to dominate. But also Aaron Rodgers. Like maybe we're fatigued because it was Hard Knocks last year and like there's so much buildup for it for only four plays. But now it's coming back and it's like we're going to get another dose of that. I'm curious to see.
Keep it under the radar. Keep it under
Curious to see like how the Jets handle it moving forward and what that looks like. Almost like, is it not going to be as big of a story because it was such a big story last year? I still can't wait to see what the Jets look like next season with Rodgers.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally true. I'm really intrigued to see what that team looks like with that defense, with those skill positions, a healthy Rodgers. I think that they're going to be a legit sleeper in that division. Okay, the Pick 6 offseason storyline prediction segment has been brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. And before we get out of here, of course, it's Valentine's Day, so we have to do something Valentine's Day related. So what we're going to do here is kind of stick to the theme of the offseason storyline. We're going to try to find something that we would love to see happen this offseason, if you can put that together. And it doesn't mean it necessarily has to happen. It's just something that would kind of warm your heart, I guess you could say, that you could see happen. For me, mine will be Derrick Henry landing with a Super Bowl contender. He's going to hit free agency, potentially. Obviously, could be hit with the franchise tag with Tennessee, but more likely than not, could hit the open market. If he could have a Christian McCaffrey-like arc where he ends up with a legit Super Bowl contender, as a key cog with that team, whatever it may be, I just think he's a phenomenal player that hasn't been able to shine as bright as he could. And if he gets to a Super Bowl contender, I think the sky's the limit for him.
I've got one. I'll throw it to you. It's actually kind of odd, but hear me out. So I'm actually hoping, all right, because we just obviously saw the Chiefs win a Super Bowl back-to-back. We know Travis Kelce's coming back, trying to three-peat. He's not trying to retire. There's a lot of speculation about that because both him and Jason Kelce can retire at the same time, try to go in the Hall of Fame together at the same time. So I'm hoping Jason Kelce doesn't retire. I feel like we heard that after the season, that like all the conversation in the locker room, I hated how that became public. That's like, to me, an intimate thing that whenever he chooses to hang it up, that should be his choice to tell the rest of the world about it. But my hope is that he decides to come back. He comes back for another season. I know he's probably not as big of a fan of the tush push, but he's such an unbelievable player. He's such an unbelievable personality. The league is better when you have guys like Jason Kelce in it, and that still protects the chance that maybe in the future they both do decide to retire together and continue to keep kicking butt on their podcast. So seems kind of odd, but I'm just a huge Jason Kelce fan with everything he's done on the field, off the field. And so I'm hoping that he continues his career despite the fact that it seems unlikely. So,
you know what? I actually like that. I'm going to combine those two, not as my pick, but imagine Derrick Henry with the Philadelphia Eagles and Jason Kelce at center.
All right, now.
That's a match made in
heaven. All right, now.
But mine's going to be more selfish reasons. It's the guy we were talking about earlier, right? T. Higgins. T. Higgins to the Jets to pair with Garrett Wilson, right? Garrett Wilson, I think, is a bona fide star in this league. and just not had the opportunity because he has not had the great quarterback play. Now, again, with this, you need Aaron Rodgers to be healthy 100%. But just imagine an offense with T. Higgins, Garrett Wilson, and Breece Hall in the backfield with a healthy Aaron Rodgers. My goodness. Talk about storylines. I wanted it just to be under the radar. But if T. Higgins goes there, you're right, Brady. The talks are going to go back up again, especially with Aaron Rodgers coming back. So T. Higgins, I know the Devontae Adams thing, there was flirting with that. I think when Antonio Pierce going back to the Raiders, I think Devontae Adams is looking to probably stay with the Las Vegas Raiders. But if T. Higgins, if that could happen, because like I said, I think they're going to tag and trade him for sure with Ja'Marr Chase. And Ja'Marr Chase kind of already let the Bengals know this offseason that he's looking to kind of reset the market. So it's going to be hard to pay both of those guys.
No, I like all three of those. I think all of them would be a phenomenal development going into 2024. Fellas, thank you for letting me ride the ship here for this podcast while Will is off somewhere in Las Vegas. I'm assuming
he's still slime out his hair still.
I'm just assuming he's still in Vegas. I'm just going to say he's just having a little bit more fun because why not? It's Vegas. But that'll do it for the end of this show. Make sure you join us tomorrow for our Super Bowl 59 Early Odds show. Remember to like, comment, subscribe on our YouTube page. For everyone listening to audio-only version, make sure you download, follow, leave a 5-star review, and tell your friends to listen/watch the pod.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.